Good morning. I'd like to call the Legacy Finance Committee meeting to order. Welcome, everyone. Ms. LaHirsch, or LaHirsch, it's funny. Ms. Hirsch, can you please call the roll?
I can. Chair Lilly.
Present.
Lilly, present. Vice Chair Jordan.
Present.
Jordan, present. Representative Green.
Present.
Green, present. Representative Akam.
Akam, present.
Akam, present. Representative Anderson.
Anderson, present.
Anderson, present. Representative Bowe. Representative Christensen.
Present.
Christensen, present. Representative Hassan.
Present.
Hassan, present. Representative Murphy.
Present.
Murphy, present. Representative Nelson.
Present.
Nelson, present. Representative Erdahl.
Erdahl, present.
Erdahl, present. Representative Wozlowick.
Wozlowick, present.
Wozlowick, present. Representative Zhang.
Here.
Zhang, present.
Well, we have a quorum. Good morning, everyone. Representative Jordan, would you be willing to move our February 24th minutes, please?
So move, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any questions regards to the February 24th meeting minutes? Seeing none, all in favor, please say aye.
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 Those opposed? The minutes are approved. Thank you, Representative Jordan. So this morning, Representative Hollins, are you with us this morning?
I am, Mr. Chair.
Oh, fantastic. I didn't see your welcome. So this morning, we're going to hear a bill that you're working on today, a state treasurer in your district, and we'd love to hear about it. So Representative Hollins, please tell us about COMO and some of your thoughts for what we should do with legacy funds and what's going on in the future here. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members of the committee. I am here to talk just briefly about the COMO Zoo and Conservatory, which I am very lucky to have in my district. And I'm even luckier to be able to go there regularly. I have a 7-year-old who this is her favorite place on earth, which is very convenient that it's nearby. And it spurred her obsession with large cats. She calls herself Cheetah Girl, so going and seeing the mountain lions and the lions are very important to her. And so I am very privileged to be able to carry this bill because it means so much to me and so much to my family. As most of you know, the chair said, you know, COMO Zoo and Conservatory is a treasure. It's a jewel for the entire state of Minnesota. It is a gorgeous facility. It brings so many people together and people from all across the state and frankly across the country and the world. We see such an amazing cross-section of individuals who go there. And I can speak from my own experience. I regularly bring visitors from Hawaii and Washington State and Alabama to COMO Zoo. My husband's aunt, who's from Poland, got married in the conservatory. And so it is such an amazing treasure. And what I'm learning now as I get into the weeds, being a new legislator, is not only is it an amazing treasure for those of us at the public, but they're also a really amazing stewards of the funding that they get. So, you know, we look at the cost of what it is per visitor for COMO Zoo, and it's approximately $4.49 per person, which, you know, if you look at any other facility in the Twin Cities, like that is an amazing cost per visitor. They really run on a tight ship, and I am so impressed with all of the work that they do. And I think you know that one of the important aspects of COMO Zoo and one of the things that people have people within the legislature and outside have fought for is to keep it free and to keep it accessible for all Minnesotans and all people who want to experience such a beautiful facility. So I would strongly encourage you all to listen closely to the testimony of our testifier today and hear more about the request that Como Zoo has as far as legacy funding. So I don't know if you want me to introduce the testifier or if you would like to, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hollins, great job. Why don't you go ahead if you'd like to? Yep.
Sure. Well, I always forget how to pronounce her last name, so it's Michelle, and I want to make sure that I say it right. Michelle yeah. Furr, is that
yeah,
it?
Yeah, Michelle, that's right. And so it's intuitive that I work with animals, so just remember the fur. But before I get started, I also want to introduce a couple of our guests and residents here at Como. So a special treat, since we can't do an in-person hearing, I have a couple of our residents. So Andrew.
Just one second. Ms. Furr, can you introduce yourself for the record, please? Ms. Furr, can you?
Yes, my name's Michelle Furr, and I am the director at Como Park Zoo and Conservatory.
Thank you.
Hi, folks. Can you hear us?
Yep.
Yeah. So we've got
giraffes are my favorite.
Yep. He's one of our favorites, too. So this is Skeeter, and he's one of the giraffes that we have here. And this is Jill, one of our all-star keepers, and she's given him one of his favorite snacks, which is some romaine lettuce.
He's so tall.
And besides our giraffe today, we also have, I think, our unofficial ambassador of this committee, and I don't think we could do a hearing without them. So we've got Ashley and Becca.
Would that be Chloe?
I gotta see her face.
She's snacking on some romaine right now.
I know.
Brown. Chloe is our Hoffman's two-toed sloth, and she is excited for things to get back to normal here and get back in the classroom and see kids and come to see all of you as well.
So thank you for indulging us and letting us have a couple of our ambassadors.
Fantastic.
And speak with you today. I'm going to share my screen now, if that is okay. And if someone can nod and let me know that they can see my screen. All right, perfect. So thank you for having us here today and giving us some time to talk a little bit about Como Park Zoo and Conservatory. For those that know, we are part of the City of St. Paul's Department of Parks and Recreation, and we are a free admission facility. So when people come to us, they can make a voluntary donation and welcome, as Representative Holland said, people from all over the world, but especially from the state of Minnesota. And during COVID, you know, we saw a dramatic decrease in our attendance. What typically we range somewhere between 1.7 million visitors to a swelling 2.2 million visitors. We saw in 2020 a drop to over just a little over 300,000 with our closures and then our reopenings and then closure again. Our revenues were down 72% last year, but one of the bright spots is that our spending was down about 20% from budget, which was due to the fact that we weren't hiring our seasonal staff, we weren't supporting the visitors while we were closed, but we still were maintaining at the highest quality the care of the plants and animals. We were able to retain all of our staff. The city made a conscious decision not to furlough staff during these troubled and challenging times. However, they were reassigned to other roles, from critical infrastructure for the campus to helping with meal distribution with the city's youth employment programs, and even working in the parks ski program this winter. But there was a gap, and the gap was filled by the generosity of our nonprofit, who rallied from their traditional support of marrying and leveraging some of the dollars from this committee to just programs and development to operation support. And then the city helped us fill that gap between revenue and spending in 2020. And I want to thank this committee and the staff at the Department of Management and Budget to being so flexible during the uncertain times and the work plan of our Arts and Cultural Heritage Legacy Funds. I think we probably had five versions of updated work plans just because we didn't know as the situation evolved from March to April to today on what we can and can't execute depending on what our program development and the guidelines are for the Zoo and Conservatory and the guests that we have. But one of the great outcomes of the shift in pivoting was a program that we launched on April 6th, and it's called Como Live, and it's a digital legacy learning module. We've produced and wrote, directed, produced, filmed, even put closed captioning and uploaded a digital library program that happened Monday through Friday, starting in April, that was a keeper talk or gardener talk or just an engagement piece, arts and crafts, behind the scenes aspects. And in the first few months, we had over 1.3 million views of this programming element and over 80,000 engagements, which means that somebody either liked it, shared it, commented on it. And it was a very popular program. We did see numbers start to slide in late summer, and so we went to 2 days a week, and this program continues. We are utilizing our public engagement team that typically would be doing things that I would be talking about, like Little Explorers or Como in the Community, and some of our other programming elements. And I don't know if you can see, and we make sure that you get these slides, but these are some of the comments we've done from part of our surveying of the guests. And especially in the early months of COVID, we definitely saw that people were really engaged in the programming aspect. And actually, five of the top 10 videos featured the two animals that you saw today, the sloth and the giraffes. Chloe's video segment in April was by far our most popular. It had over 55,000 views, and the giraffes came in as a close second. Our favorite conservatory, because we always like to make sure that we talk about the conservatory too, is we took the penguins on a march through the conservatory during our spring show during our closure. And that was our most popular conservatory video to date. So this was just an example of how we were able to pivot and the flexibility of the work plan for our legacy funded programs. So this biennium, our request is just a slight increase over the last biennium of $1.5 million for both fiscal year 22 and 23. And some of the elements that we would be utilizing that increase is to increase our program capacity, as well as increasing our statewide impact. And I'll show a little example of what we're doing now and today with those programming elements. Just to refresh your memory and some of the pieces that Como uses in our kind of our legacy suite that is funded fully through the legacy fund is our STEM focused education programs, including our residency program where classes are here for an entire week, our music series, our public engagement programs, habitat and garden experiences, and special exhibits. One of the aspects and programs that we really focused in on the last biennium and introduced were some of these inclusivity activities, including sensory-friendly events, our senior strolls, which we had our second senior stroll for 2021 yesterday, and by far was our most popular event for that group since we started it about 3 years ago. We had over 120 seniors that were able to come between 9 and 10 before we opened to the public to give them a very private experience so that they can social distance and have the zoo and conservatory really to themselves. And what we aren't doing right now is sort of that face-to-face engagement, but we will be adding that soon. And then we have, pre-COVID, had done American Sign Language Days where all of our programming on site had a ALS interpreter to go along with that so that we could welcome that community in as well. Como has always had a tradition of inspiring learning, and in our attendance and programming, we would typically touch 425,000 students through our programs and field trips each year. And as I mentioned, some of these programs are in our education area, like the residency program. Como in the Community was a new activity that we started and revamped within the last biennium, where we're going out to the community and doing free classes for those who just really can't afford it and it's a barrier to come to Como. And our Natural Encounters was a 3-series STEM-based program that was also done for free for classrooms. And this is a snapshot of our participant demographics of just our legacy funded activities of the education programs that I just mentioned. This data is from 2019, and it is a calendar year look versus a state fiscal year look. So sometimes when we're reporting, I just wanted to preference that of where this data is from. You can see here the split between our metro participation and our greater Minnesota participation is about 27.7%. And the participants in that free and reduced lunch program is over 50% at 59.3%. And here you can see the breakdown of the demographics of the students. And this is from the reporting from the school districts. Instead of us doing a self-report on site, this is their classroom pieces. And here we broke it out from metro and greater Minnesota by those percentages. And you can see that there is definitely a gap between greater Minnesota and the metro, but we are hitting all of the populations that are higher than the census for these areas. So Como's residency program, and what is that? Over 700 students, it's a high dose program where they spend an entire week here. And I don't know if you can see on the photo, but here's a young man journaling one of our polar bears, learning about adaptations and all the things that they could do in a classroom they're doing right there in the exhibit with the animals. We only offer 28 weeks during a non-COVID time, and the demand is much higher. So we had over 141 applications from 41 different school districts, and we're only able to award 28 weeks. I was just talking to a mother yesterday whose son had done the program 2 years ago, and they were so looking forward for their daughter to get into the class and that class to maybe be chosen to do it, because she was going to take the whole week off of work so that she could come in and do it with them. Because everything that she heard afterwards, whenever Como was mentioned, "Hey, Mom, did you know? Hey, Mom, did you know?" And that just shows kids love to learn, and the experience is very memorable for them and has an impact. Another one of our programs that we're happy to announce that we are bringing back this summer is our music series with Groovin' in the Gardens, where we will be socially distancing out in the yard in front of the conservatory and introducing and inviting local musicians. This program has been able to offer each year about 100 musicians a venue that's a paid gig, which they get very excited about, and an audience that they might not normally get tapped into. And what has happened over the years is now there is a great participant following that local neighbors, as well as people who are just coming to the zoo from, you know, Hermantown or from Rochester, that stick around that extra hour and a half after we close to be able to listen to the music. We've been able to continue to work on some of our habitat renewal. Here is a picture of our new submarine. It's an interactive submarine that is in our aquatics building. And kids will be able to not only feel like they are being immersed underground, underwater, and push the buttons and hear the sounds, but what that white box next to that is going to be a new habitat for us, including a new feature, which is an octopus. And we've been able to update graphics and more interactives, and we're looking at how we make those COVID-friendly in these new times. Many of you have been out for some of our special exhibits. These are either one time or one season activities or a multi-year activity like our blooming butterflies. 3 years ago, we introduced All That Buzz, a pollinator exhibit. And this is a picture of that from last summer with the exhibit. It is all pollinator friendly and connects people to the plants and animals that that we really need to keep going so that we have a continued food supply and all the benefits of pollinators. But when we were working on this program this spring, we did not know if we would even be open. We continued with plantings, but did not know what our timeline was. So this program also went to a virtual content. We started in May and did a 15-week series through September that was a little bit longer than our Como Live segments, and it lives on our website. And it's things that people can do in their backyards to be pollinator friendly, and the plants that they can plant, and how we can live in harmony with the community of pollinators. So I know I talk fast and there's a lot of content, but I wanted to leave some time for questions, but also thank you for the generosity over the last few years with this funding. None of the programming that I talked about today would be possible without these funds. But these just, it would not exist. As Representative Hollins mentioned, we are a lean, mean operating machine when it comes to operating dollars, and that we just wouldn't have this extra to continue to do any of this programming. So thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Furr. You know, just really have us real treasure there, and it's been such a blessing to all of us. It's been a blessing to my particular family. We've just been able to go so many times, and in the winter and all year round, and just what a, you know, just what a treasure. I wish you didn't have a gift store, because you've gotten me with a couple of bonsais and some other things, but that's another story. been there where you've had us. I've got a great photo of Representative Erdahl feeding that giraffe, I think. But anyways, I have member questions. Thank you so much. What a great state asset we have here. Representative Green, good morning.
Morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And either to the author or the testifiers, you mentioned that this is an increase in the ask. What is the previous ask? So how much more is this than, say, last year or maybe some other years?
Mr. Chair, Representative Green, our last appropriation, the last two bienniums, had been at $1.3 million per year. So the increase is about $200,000 per year.
Representative Green.
Okay, and I think that over the years you're probably right around a total of about $5 million. I do have a question, and this is probably more of a general question, but to the testifier as well. Every year we see, it seems like the same people keep coming back for money, but legacy funds are not supposed to supplement. And with the increase in the funds, and it seems like people are starting to use these funds for general operating, and that's not what they're for, and it can also maybe cause some problems down the road. Can you explain to me the difference between the supplement versus supplant in the money that you're requesting and what it's going to be used for?
I think you mentioned some of the new programming or, you know, the garden. I saw the garden in particular, but go ahead, please.
That's Mr. Chair and Representative Green. So I think on the question about supplanting versus supplementing. So all of the programs from residency to the Little Explorers, the sensory friendly home in the community, those never existed until we had funding available through this funding source. And that if this source went away, we would not continue to do that. So as we kind of look at, is this operational? It might be operationalized right now just because we've been doing some of the programs for 3 to 4 years. They would go away without the funding. So it's not that it's supporting the general operations, but this extra development that we can do and offer to the community. I'm sorry, now I lost the second question. What we would do with the increase. So one of the initiatives, the larger of the initiatives, is looking at a way to create an educational program that tracks a student from we're really good at second and third grade, but we kind of lose them about eighth grade until they have kids. And one of the things that we've noticed as an industry in zoos is the lack of diversity within our professional staff in the zookeeping and horticultural fields. So creating a career path that provides them the education and support from their early teen years through the end of their college era. And working with our Right Track program to help provide paid funding for the students to work, but also the educational aspects so that we can have a diverse career force going forward. One of my colleagues within the zoo community recently had a stat that there are more rookie NFL positions each year than there are open zookeeper positions. And so it is a high sought out career, but we continue to have a lack of diversity. So creating an educational program for diversity will be the largest piece of the increase. But then to continue the great work that we've done with the educational programming and as Representative Lilly mentioned, Chair Lilly, on the gardens and interactives.
Representative Green.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. One more question that doesn't really have to do as much with legacy. It's just a question for the zoo. If you look at any other organization, whether it's the Como Park or the Minnesota Zoo, they have to keep getting in new attractions and making changes just to keep people coming. how does this fit in with the Como Park? Like, let's say Legacy wasn't there. How were you making these changes before and trying to add new stuff just as a general practice within the Como Zoo or Como Park?
Thank you, Representative Green. Ms. Furr, I know we have two former capital investment chairs. I know there's been some major projects that are happening right now and freshening up, and I see you're getting a new bear as well. And but anyways, go ahead, Ms. Furr.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Green, the members of the committee. Yes, so in any institution like ours, you do have this ups and downs of peaks and valleys of attendance. And so adding a major new attraction, I think, you know, going back 20 or 30 years ago, it was sort of like you had to have something new every year. And I think over time that we have learned that the model isn't something new and flashy every year, but every 5 or 6 years that you give enough time for the community to see something and then go to the next. Part of our asset preservation and continuation of new projects is really to update the facilities and make them meet modern zoological standards. We do have Como Harbor, which is our seal and sea lion habitat that was funded through the Capital Investment Committee that we delayed the opening last year and are looking at opening in June when it's safe to do so, to invite larger crowds into the zoo to see that new habitat. But then utilizing even prior to is in those mid years of either during construction or in that lag year of that 5 to 7 year window is introducing something like the special exhibits that we've done. We started those prior to the legacy funding with blooming butterflies. That was a partnership between private dollars through the nonprofit and just our general operating piece. So doing something that is something special. We did Washed Ashore a few years ago that got a lot of traction that gives us something to talk and bring back to the community and give people another reason to say, oh, that's right, Como's there. New animals sometimes does that as well, or babies. We did introduce Nan the polar bear last week. She is a resident from Brookfield Zoo that is now going to live with us and our other polar bear meal for her, hopefully the rest of her retirement of polar bear years.
Thank you, Ms. Furr. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Furr, you I wanted to know about the story about that bear because I heard about it, but I didn't hear the story. It was lost? Was it lost?
Ms. Furr.
Representative Murphy and Sheriff Lilly. Yes, it was an orphaned cub that went into a community in Canada. And had started to become more of a nuisance bear. So it was taken to a facility and to a zoo and now has traveled and been a representative of its Canadian culture. And she is the cutest bear. I've seen a couple bears in my time, but she's one of the cutest.
Okay.
Representative Murphy.
And is she still a baby or is she full grown?
Mr.
You said retirement, so she must be full grown, right?
She is full grown, so she is in her 20s, so she is at the upper end of her life cycle. And one of the things that zoos do is we work cooperatively through the Association of Zoos and Aquariums for things like breeding recommendations and making sure that we have enough space for animals to live so that we're not overpopulating certain species. Polar bears have been one that have been on the decline for many years, and they're quite both in the wild as well as in our captive audiences. So she was moved due to a breeding recommendation for the bear, the male bear in Brookfield in Chicago. So because Neil is also one that will not be having babies with, but he lost his companion Buzz this summer. We had a loss in our family of animals. Mm-hmm. And so this will give him some companionship as well as being able to hopefully have some offspring in Brookfield that can continue our species survival plan.
Thank you, Ms. Thank Kerr.
Thank you for that information. I'm especially interested because you took care of our bear for a couple of years, and now that our bear is in Kansas, and it doesn't look like she's ever going to have a baby, so we'll probably never have another baby. But that's one story. I know you also give the summer concerts that are very well attended, and the Minnesota band plays at those concerts sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I hope you're continuing to have crowds at those concerts. But I especially wanted to hear about Sign Language Day and tell me some of the other things that you do for accessibility for people so that people that aren't real fit can have the zoo experience.
Mr.
Chair Lilly, Representative Murphy. So we do a number of activities for different audiences. So the ALS days, because we in pre-COVID times would have a full day's worth of activities that were talks and programs and the Sparky show, we would have the interpreters right there so that they can see it. I think the best example is things like our sensory friendly and senior strolls, where we have special time set aside for those audiences. And we will continue to look and identify different audiences so that we can be a place for everyone. Como is one of those facilities, because we're free and right here in the heart of the state, that people can come no matter what. So we continue to challenge ourselves on finding those right niches for each of those different demographics and being access and inclusive for all.
But what about your staff?
Representative Murphy.
Are your staff familiar enough so that these people just don't have to come on a day, or can they come in and out all the time? And how often do you have the special days?
Mr. Then we need to move.
Chair Lilly, Representative Murphy. So we are doing 2 days a month for Cedar Stolls, 2 days a day, 2 days a month for Sensory Friendly right now, just as we are getting back into welcoming guests. And our staff do go through training on things like the Autism Society's training. We do a number of other programs with them that are fee-based with camps and things like that. So we do basic training. We also have a social platform for those families to prepare for their visit, to have pictures and sort of their social plans so that they can prepare their guests. And then during senior strolls, when we do start programming where we will have outside folks come in and do yoga or kind of more educational aspects for that market.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. And Mr. Thank you. This would have been one of the most popular days of the year. Everybody would have been coming down from all over the building to see your treasures, to Chloe and others. Maybe you could have snuck the giraffe in somehow. But thank you for all you do. And we're hopefully we can get out there and visit soon. Representative Hollins, any final comments?
I would just like to thank the committee and thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to be here and especially thank Ms. Fair for the excellent presentation. And I really hope that you all will consider the request that's been put out.
Thank you, Representative Hollins. Representative Wozlik, welcome. You're on the committee. Would you like to move your bill, please?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I will move House File 1166.
So we have your bill before us, Representative Wozlik. Welcome. I mean, you're here every time, but welcome this morning. And please tell us about what you're working on here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So folks may be familiar with this from the last round of legacy funding, but just want to talk more about this and some of the changes we've made. So in the land of 10,000 lakes, outdoor recreation, especially on our lakes and other bodies of water, is part of our culture. Many of us grew up swimming, fishing, tubing, and doing other water activities with our families and friends. Unfortunately, not everyone in our state has the skills needed to be safe when they're participating in these water recreation activities. In the U.S., drowning is the second leading cause of death and injury among children ages 1 to 14 years old. Each year, approximately 830 children die as a result of unintentional drowning, and about 3,600 non-fatal injuries occur to children under 14 years old due to near-drowning incidents. Home swimming pools are the most common site for drowning, but open bodies of water like lakes are where most of the other drownings happen. As we sort of have talked about in the past with this bill, disparities exist in drowning rates in the U.S. and in Minnesota. with kids of color, particularly African-American kids, having a higher drowning rate than other folks in the community. We also know that disparities exist in who knows how to swim. For example, 79% of children in homes with incomes less than $50,000 have little to no swimming ability. And research shows that 64% of African-American children, 45% of Latino children, and 40% of Caucasian children have little to no swimming ability. There's clearly a need to do more to ensure that every Minnesota child can participate in the water recreation activities that are a big part of our culture in Minnesota, in the Midwest, and House File 1166 helps with this problem. This proposal provides funding for scholarships to help low-income and at-risk children have access to swimming lessons so that they can develop those skills and the knowledge they need to be safe around water when they're participating in these activities. I did want to point out a few changes that we made to the language in the bill this year. We changed things so that eligible applicants are not required to partner with other entities. There was a little bit of difficulty with that provision in the bill last time around, and so we wanted to make that clear. And then also just putting a cap on funds. We want the vast majority of these funds to go to those scholarships, but we also know that sometimes there is a need to train folks on the water safety instruction so that they can then provide that instruction to the kids. So wanted to acknowledge that, but also make sure that most of this money was going towards the scholarship. And I do have a testifier here to talk a little bit more about the proposal.
Thank you, Representative Wozlik. I thought it was really a great addition to the bill last cycle. And it's just it's amazing to, you know, what a treasure our lakes and waters are, but we certainly don't want people to be in danger or to be in fear. So thank you for your leadership on this. Miss Kinsler?
Yes.
Good morning.
Good morning, Chair.
Our committee, and please introduce yourself and go ahead when you're ready, please.
Thank you. Thank you so much. My name is Shannon Kinsler. I'm the Senior Association Aquatic Director for the Y of the North, and I'm speaking on behalf of the Minnesota State Alliance of YMCAs. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'm here today to testify in support of House File 1166, the 10,000 Lakes, 10,000 Youth Water Safety Program. I come before you today as a representative of the Minnesota State Alliance of the YMCAs and serve in the role as Senior Association Aquatic Director for Y of the North. Unfortunately, we presented this information to this committee prior in 2019, and sadly, the loss continues. Drowning affects all races and genders. However, it is also part of the structural inequality of life of people of color, and especially Black people. And yes, COVID only made things worse. In 2020, Minnesota again saw an increase in numbers of fatal drownings at 44, 9 more than 2019, and the highest after 2011. June 16th was most noted day recorded over the summer, with 4 near drownings on the same day in the city of Minneapolis alone. While we're aware that Minnesota is home to more than 10,000 lakes and other outdoor sizable bodies of water, but in fact, we always like to begin with the safety conversations by pointing out that the world is 71% water all over and children are 100% curious. As stated, drowning still remains a real threat to our young people, only behind car accidents for that ages 1 to 14. There's also the disparity of people who have near drownings, which usually lead to severe brain damage and other long-term, lifelong disabilities. So I wanted to return to the inequities of affecting Black people. Similar to our state's achievement gap, there's also a drowning gap. Black children are 3 times more likely to drown than their white peers, and that goes back to the stats that were already explained, that African-American children, Hispanic and Latino children have little to no swimming ability in contrast to their white peers. And then we know that, again, economics is a huge part in that role. 79% of children possess little to no swimming ability if their annual household income is less than $50,000. As a state leader in water safety, the Y believes that this reality is unacceptable, and there's always opportunities to make a change. That's where the good news is. Formal swim lessons reduce the likelihood of child drowning by 88%. And while we know no children are ever safe in the water, they always need supervision, but we know swim lessons go a long way to make them safer in, on, and around water. Now we also know that safer children then turn into safer adults, which should have an impact on the drowning rates related to boating and swimming as adults, which are very high also. For these reasons, as a statewide nonprofit led by local volunteers, the YMCA again supports the 10,000 Lakes, 10,000 Youth Water Safety Program. And specifically, the bill would provide $500,000 for organizations to fund swimming lessons for 10,000 low-income and at-risk children around the state. And yes, the limited funds for hiring and training water safety instructors or lifeguards is necessary. The money would be available to a wide variety of organizations, community eds, park and recs, Girl Scouts, YMCAs, anybody who offers nationally recognized curriculum for swim lessons. And then obviously the criteria would be determined by the Commissioner of Education. And we are excited that it would not require a partnership with other organizations. We do believe this bill is scalable. So we understand that there might be limited funds. And we still believe that any amount of money, and even $100,000, could provide 2,000 children with swimming lessons. It's important to note that swimming, considered in the context of childhood obesity, is very prevalent, but swimming is a good thing for them. It involves a full body workout combining cardiovascular and strength exercises. It's a lifetime sport. You know, many adults continue to swim and it's good for them. It can reduce the risk of stroke, heart attacks, diabetes, some cancers, lowers resting heart rates, blood pressure, and really improves cholesterol levels. For these reasons, in addition to desire to support our children, the bill is also endorsed by the Minnesota for Healthy Kids Coalition. Abby's Hope also endorses this bill as they have similar goals to keep kids safe in pools and waters, drain and treadmill, but also making sure that they understand swimming ability and safe in and around the water. While we'll never know how many drownings we prevent, but without reservation, we can declare that this bill will save the lives of children and adults in Minnesota. And it's for that reason that we ask you to support this legislation. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. And thank you for the work you're doing with our youth. Representative Wozlik, before I get to member questions, or is there any? Sure, you're good. Any member questions?
Yep, we're good.
I don't see any. So Representative Wozlik, would you like to renew your, or any final comments, and then you can renew your motion, please. Sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yep. Just want to reiterate, you know, the purpose of this is really to encourage and get kids engaged, especially in the outdoor recreation programs and the ways that we can be involved in, especially water recreation. I have fond memories of fishing myself as a child, but also in my work outside of the legislature in our child care program, teaching kids how to fish and being there to help them do that, tubing down the river as a kid. So just, you know, really want other kids to have the opportunity to engage in water recreation opportunities that exist in our state and want to make sure that they can do that safely. So would appreciate the support of members as we move forward in the process. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative. With that, Representative Wozlik renews her motion that House File 1166 be laid over. The bill is laid over. Thank you, Representative Wozlik and Ms. Kinsler. Thank you for the work with our youth and keeping them safe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Erdahl, good morning. Welcome to your committee. I see you brought I understand you're going to have two friends today. So
yes, well,
Representative Erdahl moves that House File 328 be laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Erdahl, we have your bill before us. Go ahead, sir.
Thank you. And since I discovered it was Animal Day, Buster wanted to make an appearance. But Buster really loves the Opera House. So I do have an amendment we should probably do first.
Okay. Representative Erdahl moves A1 amendment. Representative Erdahl, do you want to tell us briefly about it?
Yeah, basically the rendition of the bill that was first drafted was an older one, the electricity has been taken care of. This was the next step. This is what was supposed to have been in the bill, which is to repair and replace windows, millwork, staircases, the balcony, and the stage.
Thank you, Representative Verdal. We have the A1. Any questions to the A1 amendment to get the, in shape the author would like? All those in favor, please say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Representative Verdal, we have your bill before us, amended.
Yeah, about 3-0, I think, was the vote on. Come on, you guys, get with me.
They are. I saw, you know, this,
all right.
This mute time.
Well, so a lot of you have been at the Opera House in Litchfield. I'll just say that since that time, the walls have been finished. They've been painted. The floor has been redone. So there have been some improvements since you were there. The ceiling as well. Once listed in the top 10 most endangered buildings in Minnesota, the Litchfield Opera House was built in 1900 and is on the National Register of Historic Places. It was the site of the formation of Land O'Lakes, the naming of the first all-electric farm in the United States, and the funeral of Senator Magnus Johnson, and plus where I saw Santa Claus for the first time. It was slated to be demolished by a wrecking ball to become a parking lot. It was rescued by a devoted band of conservationists. Through help from the state and ongoing private donations and self-generated revenue, the Opera House has undergone a remarkable renovation of the exterior and now the interior. It has regained its place as a center of the community. But more needs to be done, and help is needed to reach these goals. Without legacy funding, this building would have been destroyed years ago. We have been fortunate to have been granted, two or three grants from the state through legacy a couple times, I think, once through bonding. And these requests are part of a succession aimed at the completion. So it's all part of it, and we're getting close to getting done. And I want to say, certainly we're thankful to the state for the help they've been giving us, because otherwise it just wouldn't have happened. I will also say that a couple other little things that are being considered. When performers are getting ready to step onto the stage, they often sit in a room off to the side called the green room. Well, in the Litchfield Opera House, it's now the Steve Green Room, leading to the Lily Stage.
That's great.
And there's the apparently there's a another room where they can recline, and the Murphy bed is there. So with that, I'm very pleased today to be able to have with me the volunteer secretary of the Greater Litchfield Opera House Association, and that would be Mrs. Karen Erdahl.
Well, welcome, Mrs. Erdahl. We're all been so blessed through the years with Litchfield cheese and you visiting. We often wonder, you must have the amazing stories that you could tell about Representative Erdahl.
I have some dandies. I was thinking maybe Dean and I should eat some cheese now, and we could virtually share cheese with you that way.
Awesome. Well, welcome, Representative Erdahl, or Mrs. Erdahl. And
thank you, Mr. Chair.
Nice to see you again. Please go ahead.
Okay. Mr. Chair and Board, committee, as Dean said, I'm the volunteer secretary for the Litchfield Opera House Board, and we are a 501c3 nonprofit run strictly by volunteers. Our purpose is to protect, preserve, and promote the Litchfield Opera House as a community and historic resource while generally promoting the arts. Over the past decade, we've raised nearly $500,000 from events, memberships, donations, and rentals. Our annual operating cost is $12,000. Anything above that goes to restoration and renovation. Our unique historic venue is growing in demand as the R&R advances. We're now booking weddings and receptions for 2022. We reached underserved people with a variety of programming, ranging from a Smithsonian Musical Heritage show, to Tonic Sofa, to the Minnesota Band, jazz bands, plays, musicals, open mic nights, the list goes on and on. Our children's theater enables kids to become involved at no cost. Everyone who tries out gets a role, either on stage or behind the scenes, free of charge. The Opera House provides free meeting space for public service gatherings such as MnDOT informational hearings, things of that nature.
Ms. Erdahl, you muted by mistake or just kind of bumped it or something. Oh, there we go. Thank you.
What was the last word that you heard?
Just back up a couple sentences, maybe. Okay. Sorry.
Our children's theater enables kids to become involved at no cost. Everyone who tries out gets a role on stage or behind the scenes free of charge. The Opera House provides free meeting space for public service gatherings such as MnDOT, informational hearings, local candidate forums, that type of thing. We received last year a $10,000 legacy planning grant and hired a firm to prepare the specs for final finishing. We shall be receiving those soon from the architect so we can let bids. We deeply appreciate the state grants that we have received, and we advertise this at the top of our donor wall display with a plaque that says, "The Litchfield Opera House, your opera house, a continuing grand performance produced by the voters of Minnesota through the legacy amendment, now appearing for all present and future generations." So with that, Mr. Chair, if anybody has any questions, I would be glad to field them.
Thank you, Mrs. Erdahl. I'm so glad that we've had the opportunity to I've heard about the Opera House for years, and then actually being able to be there was actually quite priceless. It was really neat. So thank you.
Well, you know, the silver lining of COVID last year and having so many events canceled was that it gave us more time to get more done. And
right.
And so even more has been done since you saw it. And in fact, Dean and I plan on having our wedding anniversary, our golden wedding anniversary there this August 28th, Saturday afternoon. The proceeds we're going to give to the Opera House. If anybody cares to, you know, make a donation that day, we'll give it to the Opera House. And so we would like to make sure that you all know that you're warmly invited.
Well, we may have to load up a bus.
That would be fun.
Thank you.
There'll probably be more than cheese and crackers that day, too, I think.
Thank you, Mrs. Erdahl. Representative Erdahl, anything to add? Or we didn't see your picture, so there we go. Up, lift it up just a little so we can see it.
There it is.
So is there any member questions in regards to the Litchfield Opera House? Representative Green?
Oh, here we go. Well, Mr. Chair, my hand wasn't up, but seeing as how you called on me. This is, you know, I know that Representative Rudolph has worked a long time on this, but I still have concerns over the place some of the money gets spent. It's state tax dollars, but I find that when I ask questions that they just get pushed aside anyway, so we'll let it go. This bill's being laid over, I assume.
Yes, sir. Yes,
sir. All right, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Green. Representative Erdahl, is there any other, before we get to you, any other member questions? Again, Representative Erdahl, thank you for bringing this forward. Congratulations, 50 years. I'm surprised she, coming from a hockey family, I'm surprised she went with you, the basketball player you are. She, I'm sure her father wasn't too happy about that. But Representative Murphy, I see you have a question.
What was the date of that anniversary?
Saturday, August 28th.
Thank you.
Weekend before Labor Day weekend.
Thanks, Karen.
Mm-hmm. Representative Erdahl, any final? Oh, Representative Bowe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to say I have, on my way through Litchfield, stopped in and taken a look, and it's quite a building, and it's fun to see the progress they've been making there. And then I had a question, which is similar to Representative Murphy's question, except instead of the date, I wanted to find out the time of the Erdahl celebration.
Well, we haven't finalized that yet.
Mrs. Erdahl, okay.
But I'm thinking it'll be from 1 to 4. So, you know, we might expand it from that, but the minimum hours would be 1 to 4. You know, it might end up being 1 to 5 or whatever.
Well, congratulations. Representative Bowe, any further?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Christensen, good morning.
Thank you. Hi, thank you, Mr. Chair. And thanks, Rep. Erdahl. I just want to say that I'm happy to see that you're doing this. And coming from Stillwater, we are all about preservation and the importance of it. And, you know, the old opera houses are treasures for sure. We had a very large, gorgeous, gorgeous opera house here in Stillwater that was torn down. And it's now got a modern building in its place. And we all, so this was in the 60s, and we all sort of cringe thinking at what could be if it was still there. So I fully support, you know, your bill or your request for legacy, and thank you for taking care of our history. Thanks much.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl.
Well, thank you very much. You know, this fits in line with one of my interests in my legislative career, and that's preserving and reconstructing buildings, the state capitol being one of them. So we have started the process with the Opera House. We have been locally receiving some state funding, and it makes sense to finish it off because we are very close to getting done. So thank you,
Representative Erdahl and Mrs. Erdahl. Again, congratulations on the 50 years. With that, Representative Erdahl renews his motion that House File 328 be laid over.
As amended.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl.
Thank you.
So we, I think we're there. We've had a few meetings where we really packed it in, and I was feeling really bad. And so we're going to try to, we tried to open it up. Now maybe we opened it up a little too much, but but we will have bills in the future. I just want to mention the other day an opportunity to get up the avenue here real close to the Capitol. So if you're here, there's a Minnesota Pollution Control display on a corner, and it's they put a it's called We Are Water, and it's a great little exhibit. And they did it within partnership with the Hmong Museum. And it's literally blocks away from here. So if you're looking for a little nice spring walk outside to walk around and look at the different panels, and it was just a wonderful little display. And it's a couple hundred or a couple blocks from here. So I thought that was pretty neat. And it definitely was a legacy-sponsored project. So any other member observations or comments, or if not, I don't see anything. With that, we are adjourned. Thank you, everyone.